This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another exciting topic of discussion today. I'm proud to have with me today John Palatiello. Welcome, John.
Good morning, Kurt.
As I think all of our listeners know, John and his company, John and Palatiello and Associates, is the government affairs consultant to NSPS. John Bird is specifically our appointed representative or appointed outreach person, but John Palatiello obviously works with us very closely as well. And John has been on the scene here in D.C. for a long time. I'm sure a lot of our members will remember that. But, John, I think you told me you came here in the early to mid-70s sometime?
In the 1980s, Kurt. In 1982, I became the first government affairs director for ACSM.
And prior to that, you'd actually worked on the Hill some, right?
I did. I was an assistant to members of Congress starting in 1975.
So you've been around the block a time or two with this whole political deal and, I guess, seeing the ups and downs, obviously a keen observer of what goes on in American politics. I was thinking as we were listening to that latest, I guess it was a PR that came on right before the show started, where whatever the topic was they were talking about was surgery recommended. So I don't know, is that a good characterization of what transpired at the last election?
It very much so. It was a a heart transplant. It was a lobotomy. It was major surgery was done to the body politic of America, that's for sure.
Yeah, maybe we could talk about that a little bit and maybe even provide a little bit of insight into perhaps what led up to that. I think I heard, was it this weekend, the Louisiana Senate seat was, or the one of the Senate seats was finally decided?
Yes. There's still one race left to be decided from November 4th, and that's a recount that is still ongoing in Arizona in a district around Tucson. Other than that, the election is finally over. Louisiana has a very unusual system. They have what they call a jungle primary, and that means that on election day when the rest of America votes, that's actually a primary day in Louisiana. And then if in each race, if no candidate gets 50% of the vote or more, the top two go into a runoff regardless of party. So you could have two Democrats going into the runoff. You could have potentially two Republicans. And that is what occurred in Louisiana with a Senate seat and two seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. So what's happened is we've seen one of the most overwhelming elections in modern American history. And over a period of the last couple of years, we've seen one of the most significant shifts in American election political history as well. With the Louisiana race on Saturday, where the incumbent Senator Mary Landrieu was defeated, Democrat, defeated by a Republican, Dr. Cassidy, who was a congressman, the Republicans will convene in January in Congress with 54 Republican senators. In the House, there will be 246 Republicans, as I say, with one race in Arizona still in a recount. That will be the largest number of Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives since 1947, and possibly, depending on how that Arizona race turns out, possibly the largest number of Republicans in the House since 1928. So that is a significant trend in politics. Let me put it in a little bit of a perspective, and we can talk about this in more detail, Kurt. The Democrats lost 63 seats in Congress in 2010, which was the first Obama off-year election. and then lost 12 in 2014. So that's 75 seats. That's the largest number of midterm losses by a president's party in American history.
And with the Senate kind of flipping at this point, well, not kind of, but did flip, that is their suit. Is there, you said that was was this the first time the Republicans have actually been in the majority since 47? Or just
no? No, it is the largest. It's the largest majority in the House since 47. But
okay.
It is not the first time the Republicans have been in the majority. The Republicans were in the majority in the 50s under Eisenhower, and the Republicans had both the House and Senate in the 90s under Bill Clinton, and then for a period in the early part of this century under George W. Bush. But it's interesting to see what's happening in the shifts in the country. Let me give you two examples. West Virginia, that had long been a one-party state. The Democrats are accustomed to controlling virtually everything. On November 4th, the Republicans won a Senate race and two competitive House races. The entire congressional delegation from West Virginia in Congress, in the House, will be Republican. The Republicans won control of the State House, and then after some party switches, they now control the State Senate. This will be the first time that the entire congressional delegation on the House side from West Virginia has been all Republican since 1921, and they even elected to the state legislature an 18-year-old student at West Virginia University, a young lady. Let's look at Arkansas, another state in the Deep South. This is where Bill Clinton came from. When the new Congress convenes in January, both U.S. senators from Arkansas will be Republicans, the entire congressional delegation, House and Senate, will be Republicans. If you look at a map of the United States and you go from the Virginia-North Carolina border south and west to Texas, every state will have a Democrat governor, state house, and state senate. Virginia is the only exception where it has a Democratic governor but a state house, a Republican state house, state senate.
So you meant they would have Republican control. You said Democrat, but I think you meant control. Republican.
Did I say Democrat? I apologize.
Yeah.
Republicans, yes.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, this was not just this was not a regional victory for Republicans. In the U.S. House of Representatives, Republicans gained seats in Maine, New Hampshire, New York, Illinois, and Iowa. Those are all states that President Obama carried in 2008-2012. Now, something that's a little closer to most surveyors, the state level. 146 million Americans will live in 23 states where they have a Republican governor, a Republican state house, and a Republican state senate. Only 49 million Americans will live in seven states where the Democrats have the governor, the House, and the Senate. 112 million Americans will live in states where there's a split between the party that controls the governorship and the state legislature. But here's the interesting statistic, Kurt. The Republicans will control 68 out of 98 partisan state legislative chambers. That's the most in the history of the Republican Party. And there will be more Republican state legislators, individual Republican state legislators in the United States in January than at any time in our nation's history. And the reason why it was 98 partisan state legislative chambers is Nebraska has a unicameral legislature, only one body. They don't have a House and a Senate.
And if I recall correctly, there was some gain is the right word, at least from the Republicans' perspective, I guess, in governorships too, right?
Yes. As I said, the Republicans, I don't have that number right in front of me, but a majority of the states, I think this is the high point in American history, will have Republican governors as well. So what this really means is that what candidate Obama and President Obama did in 2008 and 2012 in terms of voter identification and voter turnout, which were really extraordinary and to be studied and to be admired by any student of American politics. What I think it means is that those are tied to Mr. Obama personally and are not being replicated generally for the Democrat Party. Now, what happens in 2 years when we have another presidential election remains to be seen, whether that kind of voter identification and voter turnout can be manifested for someone like a Hillary Clinton. I don't know. You know, this time 8 years ago, everyone thought that the election of Ms. Clinton as president and as not Democratic nominee was viewed as inevitable. And we all know that, you know, a funny thing happened on the way to the forum.
Right. So, well, I think it's just evidence of you never really know what's going to happen. And I think, there are a lot of whys, I guess, in terms of, you hear a lot of conversation about turnout or not turnout or interest or not interest because there wasn't really no presidential election this year. And, of course, that, as you point out, kind of carries some coattails, I suppose. But one of the things we got about a minute before our first break here, but one of the things I want to talk about when we come back was, okay, what does this all mean now? Because to people who are in the professions like we are in surveying, and of course being business people, there are a lot of interests that we have in what happens in the political and regulatory arena everywhere. I think some people maybe don't think about it quite so much at the federal level, but it's there. I mean, it certainly exists. And you probably know more about that than anybody I know. So maybe we can talk about that and see, maybe talk a little bit about the whys if we have a thought about that, but certainly talk about what they're going to lead to, I guess.
I'll be happy to.
So we'll
do that after the break.
Yeah, we've got a few more seconds before the break, but that is what I want to cover when we come back and see what that means for us, for surveyors, for NSPS, for our state members, and just our professions in general, everything related to the whole geospatial arena. So let's go to the break, okay. And we'll be right back.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with International Mine Action Programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back with John Paltiello. We talking about the recent elections and what that may mean for the country and in particular for people who are in our business. I guess that's one of the questions. We hear from time to time that the business environment has improved over the last little while. And, of course, we hear all kinds of different reports, so we don't really know what's real and what isn't real. But I'm interested in your thoughts about all of that. You know, just first of all, if there's any other thoughts about why this major transition occurred and then what impact is that really going to have on people like surveyors.
Well, it's interesting. There was an exit poll done on Election Day, and I've gone through and analyzed it, and one question and answer really jumped out at me, and that is there was an exit poll question that says, which of the following is closer to your view? Government is doing too many things better left to businesses and individuals, or government should do more to solve problems? And of those people who voted on November the 4th, it was 54% said government is doing too many things better left to businesses and individuals, and only 41% said government should do more to solve problems. And I think there's a view out there, Kurt, that the government has sort of overstepped its reach and getting involved in too many things, whether it's environmental regulation or health care, or even things that we've witnessed, like the Labor Department ruling on Davis-Bacon. It's the government stepping in and involving itself in things that it really doesn't need to be involved in. And that's what an overwhelming majority of people who voted on Election Day were thinking. And I think that's a significant barometer that there's still a lot of uncertainty in the economy. You know, there is job growth, and that's certainly a positive, but it's not as robust as I think people would like it to see or think it should be. I think a lot of companies are still holding back on investment and on hiring because of uncertainty still about health care. While gas prices are low right now, I think there's still uncertainty about what our energy policy will be and what the cost of fuel will be. And a lot of uncertainty with regard to environmental regulation. And I think that's still having very much of a dampening effect on the economy. While jobs are being created, the number of people that are out of work or working part-time when they are capable and desirous of working full-time, those numbers are still significantly higher than the norm. So, I've not talked to anyone who's saying they're setting records for revenue or they're hiring by leaps and bounds because they can't keep up with the demand. I think there's still a little sluggishness in the economy, and folks are hoping for a little more certainty and a little bit more strength in the new year.
Yeah, you mentioned the Davis-Bacon thing, and of course that impacts us in particular as well as some other people. But in some of those conversations that I was in, going with JB to different coalition meetings and that kind of thing, it seemed like there was that type of thing happening beyond just Davis-Bacon. That seems to be happening in other arenas, too. Maybe that had an impact. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. I was using Davis-Bacon as an example in our community, but I was trying to put it into a context of a lot of other things, both large and small, where you have different businesses, different industries, different professions, and the populace as a whole saying, well, wait a minute, the government is getting too big, it's getting too invasive and involved in things. And you're right. You go to meetings in Washington, you listen to folks from other businesses, other professions, other industries, and they can give you an example of something they're fighting that makes us feel, with regard to Davis-Bacon, for example, that at least we're not alone, that a lot of people are fighting these kinds of battles.
And obviously, in our case with Davis-Bacon, it was... I don't know if shock is the right word, but certainly it was a jolt to the system having gone all those years with a particular position that just kind of got turned completely around.
Well, it certainly came out of nowhere, and it was certainly a position that was 180 degrees opposite of what had been the precedent and the norm on this issue for many, many years.
And I guess
I think, Kurt, in talking about your first question to me about, you know, what happened in the election and what the lineup will be in Washington in January, I think our Davis-Bacon issue is one of those where a Republican Congress means we may see more action and attention to solve a problem like ours with Davis-Bacon. I think it's much more of a pro-business Congress. I think there will be a lot more sympathy to an issue like ours with Davis-Bacon, and I think that's an example of where there could be some action in the new Congress where maybe the votes weren't there or the desire to tackle an issue like this through the legislative process maybe wasn't as strong as it will be in the new year.
Yeah, and I guess from that whole gridlock perspective, people tend to think about gridlock between the Congress and the executive branch, but with the change in majorities, and well, not the change of majority, the expansion of majority in the House and the change in majority in the Senate, it would appear perhaps that between those two houses at least, maybe that gridlock ends. I'm not sure if people are really concerned that, well, even if you get past that, or is it going to get stopped, at the president's desk, or are you? And I know there's concern about the whole executive order thing. So
you're right. There is no question that we will see more legislation actually pass the House and Senate in the 114th Congress, which is the number of the new Congress that will be seated in January. There'll be more legislation passed by the House and Senate in the new Congress than we saw in the last Congress. The last Congress, in terms of numbers of bills passed, was the least productive Congress, I think, in American history, or at least in modern history. Now, some people would say, well, that's a good thing. We have too many laws. We have too many government programs. Congress that does less harm. And that may be the case. But as you implied in your question, this is going to set up actually two new dynamics. One is, will you see an avalanche of legislation passed by the House and Senate where this past 2 years legislation tended to die in the Senate? But now will you see the president vetoing bills that come from a Republican Congress? The other thing to keep in mind is, and I think the mainstream news media tends to not pay attention to this, but both parties are moving more and more to their extremes. You hear a lot of discussion about the Republican Party is becoming much more conservative, but the fact of the matter is the Democratic Party is becoming much more liberal as well. And so, therefore, the ability to reach compromise becomes more difficult between the two parties. But also, this makes the job of John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, and Mitch McConnell, who will become the Majority Leader of the Senate, it will make their job much more difficult because they're going to have the rightward pull of their respective conferences or caucuses. Republicans call it a conference, not a caucus, but within their membership, there's going to be this pull away from the political center. And then there's the question of what's the president going to do? Is he going to compromise? Remember, in 1994, 2 years into his presidency, Bill Clinton had a Republican House and Senate elected. And being a very astute politician, President Clinton negotiated. And remember the term triangulation, positioning himself between the Republicans on one side and the liberal Democrats on the other side. And Bill Clinton positioned himself in between. And and the President and the Congress balanced the budget. The President and the Congress came together and passed welfare reform. So the big question is, will President Obama do the same thing, or will he be much more defiant of Congress? And we don't know whether what he did since the election on the executive order of immigration is sort of a warning signal, or if it is an indication of exactly what we're going to see the next 2 years. So I don't have any better crystal ball than anyone else as to whether that that gridlock will change or whether we'll just have to be in for more of the same.
So, and I know we're only a couple minutes away from break here, and you know, that's the political side of things. How does that work its way through to the regulatory side, to the agencies that we deal with?
Well, what I think is going to happen is there will be somewhat of a showdown. When the executive branch takes action through regulations, through policies, through executive orders, through what they believe is their authority under current law, the natural reaction from Congress is to assert its role. And the biggest role Congress has under the Constitution is the power of the purse. So you can start seeing appropriations bills that say, for example, that the Customs and Border Service cannot expend funds to grant any kind of amnesty or clemency to an individual who's not a citizen of the United States and is here illegally. You could see Congress putting a provision on the Labor Department appropriations bill that says none of the funds in this act may be used by the Department of Labor to reclassify survey technicians as laborers and mechanics under the Davis-Bacon Act. That's an exercise of the power of the purse where Congress adds or attaches strings to appropriations bills, and then if the President vetoes that bill because he doesn't like that Davis-Bacon provision, well, then he shuts down all of the funding for the Department of Labor, because at the federal level, the President doesn't have line item veto. So he either has to take the whole bill with some provisions he may not like, or he has to veto the whole bill because there are provisions he does not like. So I think we're going to see some of that in the coming year.
Yeah, I guess the other option is you find some way to compromise before everything shuts down. We're at
exactly.
The next break, so let's go do that, and we'll be right back.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953, first with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
As our regular listeners know, when we come back for our third segment, we always do our contest for our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes. And our listeners also know that I will ask our guest a question, and whatever answer that guest gives, the first person to email that answer to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com is the winner today. And so I'm going to use this opportunity, John, to ask you the question so you can tell our audience the name of NSPS registered agent.
Yes, a fellow on my staff that is the registered lobbyist before the Congress on behalf of NSPS is John Byrd, B-Y-R-D. For those who don't know, first of all, he goes by JB here in the office so that we don't confuse he and I. But JB is from the very famous political Byrd family of Virginia. His grandfather was a United States Senator. His great-grandfather was the governor of Virginia and United States Senator. So actually, JB's mom is an elected county supervisor currently in Clark County, Virginia. So he comes from a very prestigious Virginia family.
Yeah, he comes by his interest honestly, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
That's for sure. And JB does a great job for us. He's a very good voice for us. And he is, I think, just his demeanor, his personality is a big asset too. I won't say easygoing guy, but I mean he certainly has that that perspective on things, and I think he gets a lot done and has good influence with people.
He has a very calm demeanor and has some great relationships with folks on Capitol Hill, both members of Congress and senators and their staffs, and works well with our colleagues in the government agencies as well.
And speaking of those agencies, when we went to the break, we were talking about what the legislature can do and what the whole process of vetoes and how they get overturned or not, which is not an easy task. But I was curious about how, with that environment, or maybe just because of politics in general, how does that impact the day-to-day operations, ongoing situations within the agencies? I mean, do they tend to frame what the way they look at things based on who happens to be in power at the time? I mean, sometimes it seems that way. Maybe I'm just viewing it incorrectly. I don't know.
There's no question that the prevailing administration not only has an influence but has a role in that. When agencies put out major policies or regulations, they have to be cleared by the White House. They do go to the White House policy office, domestic policy office, or sometimes by law they have to go to an office within OMB, the Office of Management and Budget. Let me give you an example. So Congress passed a bill in 2012, an FAA bill, and as you know and as our listeners know, if they've been paying attention to the guests that you've had, there was a section in that FAA bill where Congress said to the Federal Aviation Administration, go forth and develop a set of regulations to permit commercial companies to fly small, low-altitude, unmanned aerial vehicles. So the FAA has been developing those regulations. Those regulations must go through FAA and the Department of Transportation. Then they go to an office in the White House called the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, or OIRA, it's called in Washington. And they're sort of the traffic cop, and they take a look at it. They have analysts. They have economists. They have lawyers that look at it. And then it goes out to the agencies across the government for review and then out for public comment. So that has occurred, and the UAV rule is out before the agencies. We've had that confirmed by a senior individual in an agency that we've talked to, and that it's now today is the 8th of December, and we expect that that rule will be out for public comment by the end of the year, by the end of December. So obviously, the White House in that review has some role in the development of that regulation, and there is certainly a political and philosophical and ideological viewpoint in addition to making sure that the rule is within the four corners of the law as Congress passed it. So that's true of a variety of different things. I'll give you another example. Kurt, you and I were in a meeting with Gary Kent on behalf of NSPS with our friends at the American Land Title Association just a couple of weeks ago. And we were talking about approaching the Department of Housing and Urban Development with regard to policies of HUD and how they're dealing with the ACSM, ALTA standard for land title surveys and some inconsistencies between the way work is done in the private sector and the way work is done when housing is government financed. Again, that's a regulation issue. Congress doesn't have to act. There doesn't have to be a role for Congress to pass legislation. It's regulations implementing current law. And we work with the agencies on those issues, just like we work with Congress on legislative issues.
So, obviously, that's as big a part of our government affairs program as anything else.
Yes,
I think people sometimes tend to think we only talk to the legislators, but obviously that's a big part of what we do.
Correct.
And that goes all up and down the scale, obviously, from the issues we've had over time with the whole railroad abandonment thing and taking away the rails to the light squared issue to any number of things. And I guess
look for example, Kurt, look at CFEDs. Congress did not pass a CFEDs bill. BLM determined that under its authority as the steward of the public lands that a certification program was desirable and that it was within their authority under the law to develop that program. So that did not require a specific act of Congress. That was an agency action under existing authority, and it was done by policy and regulation, not by specific legislation. And yes, we become very involved in liaison and advocacy with those agencies on behalf of the surveying profession.
Yeah, but looking ahead, obviously there's legislation that we'll be interested in and regulation. Any practice type issues that you're seeing sort of out there on the fringe that may come into play, or even business-related activity?
Well, in terms of business-related activity, I think there is unquestionably going to be action in a new Congress on health care. Whether it is total repeal and reform or whether it is making revisions on the margin, that remains to be seen. We may see a Supreme Court decision that strikes down part of the law and will make it necessary for Congress to go back and revisit it. So in terms of a business issue, that is certainly one. Corporate tax rate, that's an issue where there seems to be a developing consensus among both Republicans and Democrats that our corporate tax rate is too high and that it makes a lot of American businesses less competitive in the global market, and at a time when we still have high unemployment and sluggish economic growth, I think there is a view that maybe cutting the corporate tax rate would help get the economy going. In terms of specific issues that will likely come before Congress and things that will be of great interest to NSPS members, I mentioned before the Davis-Bacon Act. That is something that may come before the Congress. The highway bill, I call it the highway bill. The most recent one was called MAP 21. It funds both highways and mass transit programs. That expires this spring. Congress did a short-term extension. So there is a lot of interest in doing a reauthorization bill on highways. Now, that may mean in a Republican Congress public-private partnerships, which sort of changes the dynamics in terms of who are the clients for surveyors. It may not be the state DOT any longer. It may be a private company that's partnering with the state DOT. The airports and FAA authorization expires this year and this coming year, and that will be up. I think Congress may revisit the FEMA flood insurance program yet again. And then I think there is a good chance that we'll see action on the FLARE Act. There is a growing recognition that the government owns a lot of surplus land that it doesn't need any longer, and putting land into ownership in the private sector, it can be used for more robust economic activities and generating tax revenues. So I think there will be a push on asset sales and the need for a land inventory to facilitate the sale of surplus property. So I think those are some things very much of interest to the surveying profession that there's a good likelihood we'll see action upon in the 114th Congress when it comes into office in January.
Certainly sounds as though we have lots of things to be interested in, be aware of, and need to have our voice heard on. And when we come back from break, maybe we can talk a little bit about how that works and how much we need support from everyone to be able to represent our profession well. Before we go to break, by the way, you mentioned the public-private partnerships. We just announced this morning with an email out to our group about our upcoming conference in the spring in April, and there's going to be a session on that, isn't there?
Sort of a variation on that theme, yes. There will be, as part of this conference, there will be an umbrella national surveying and mapping conference, and under that umbrella there will be individual conferences, including the NSPS spring leadership meeting. But there will also be a Department of Homeland Security symposium on the concept of licensed geospatial data. And that's certainly an area where there's a role for both the government and the private sector. So it is, in effect, a public-private partnership, different than the kind of public-private partnership, or P3, that we see on a toll road, for example, but a partnership between business and government nonetheless. So we can talk about that a little bit when we come back from the break as well.
Yeah, we certainly are eager to, now that we have our contract signed with the hotel, let everybody know about our meeting, our conference, and when it's going to occur, and something we hope leads to bigger and better things. So we can talk about that a little bit, and then we need to talk about how folks can stay in touch with us and with you on the issues. So let's go to the last break. We'll be right back.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back with our last segment with John Palatiello today, talking about the environment after the elections, and then just in general how that impacts and how other things impacts what we do as surveyors and our profession. Just before we went to break, we were beginning to talk some about our upcoming conference, which will be the week of April 12 through 17 in Crystal City, Virginia, really close to Reagan Airport at the Hilton Hotel. And I do want to follow up on that some, John. I don't I don't know if you want to do that first or if you want to talk a little bit about our PAC and how people contact us and that kind of thing.
Well, I think they're connected, Kurt. Yes, the conference will be, actually, I believe it'll start on Monday the 13th,
yep,
13th, if I remember correctly,
mm-hmm, yep,
which I think is appropriate because that's Thomas Jefferson's birthday. So we'll be certainly celebrating a great surveyor from the past. So as I mentioned before the break, you and I have been working very closely to put together the foundation of a national surveying and mapping conference, something that NSPS has not been involved in for several years now. And what we will have four conferences within the overall umbrella conference. And those four are the NSPS Spring Meeting, the MAPS Federal Programs Conference, a National Geodetic Survey conference that includes a meeting of the Federal Geodetic Subcommittee. It will be a meeting of their partnership program, and then it'll be their general symposium on NGS issues, and particularly with regard to the new datums. And then the fourth, as I mentioned before, will be a Department of Homeland Security symposium on licensed data. So what we will do is all four of those conferences will fall under the sort of be tent poles holding up a bigger tent. We'll have an exhibit hall. We'll have some social events and opportunities to network. And we want everyone to mark their calendar because Wednesday, April 15th, will be our day on Capitol Hill. And the members of NSPS and the members of MAPS will jointly try to increase their presence and footprint and influence on Capitol Hill. And members of the two organizations will go to Capitol Hill together on Wednesday, April 15th, to meet with our congressmen and senators and talk about some of the issues we've already talked about today, and make the views and the interests of the surveying and mapping profession known among our legislators. And I think this is going to be a really exciting conference. I think it's going to be something new and different. And hopefully we can build it and grow it over the years into something really spectacular. But I think even in the first year, we're going to have, I think, a really worthwhile conference. And I would hope that everyone who's listening will make a point of coming to the conference. We will also have other sessions in addition to the four that I mentioned. So it'll be a great opportunity for education. We're not going to compete with the states, the state surveyor societies that do a great job in their various continuing education programs. But what we're going to do is focus in two regards. One is on new technology and new emerging markets and partnerships and ways that folks can work together in today and tomorrow's environment, and collaboration is really, just as MAPS and NSPS are collaborating on this conference, and we have DHS and NGS participating, the theme of this conference is also going to be collaboration. So our real focus is going to be on business and technology, less so on the kinds of techniques and procedures that one traditionally gets from continuing education at the state level. So we've tried to identify how this could be different and complementary and not in any way competitive with the state surveyor societies. And I think we're going to have a wonderful program and a great event.
Yeah, I agree with that. One thing that I will add is that although we're not setting ourselves up to be what I call a continuing education conference because of all the things you just mentioned, there will be some people who can use what they do here because of the way their state laws are structured. So people who attend this are, depending on where they come from, they may be able to use it. But that's not what we're actually doing it for. But I just wanted to let people know that depending on what their state allows, they might be able to use some of the sessions for to help.
You're absolutely right. That is not the primary intent of this conference, but it could be a fringe benefit to many of our members who are licensed or certified and need a certain education to maintain that status.
Yeah, and I wanted to point out, too, at the, I think we're going to do on Monday, the NSPS finals of the student competition. So we're really eager about that. I know in talking to some of the people in the schools, they're excited about the fact of where we're going to be. I think some of them are looking at it beyond the competition as an opportunity for their students, perhaps, to go down with us on Capitol Hill and see how things work and get some sense of what that is, which will be a great experience for them as well.
Well, we've picked, I think, a very convenient hotel. As you said, it's in what's called Crystal City, which is part of Arlington, Virginia. It's just across the river from downtown Washington. It is literally a stone's throw from Reagan National Airport, and the hotel is also about two blocks from a Washington Metro station. So getting, and actually the hotel is on the same line of the Washington Metro subway system as the line that goes to Capitol Hill. So it'll be very easy, very convenient for our members to go to Capitol Hill. So I think we've touched all the right bases in our planning for this conference. Let me add, Kurt, that this is an important part of the NSPS Government Affairs Program. And going to Capitol Hill on our Hill Day certainly gives surveyors a voice and a seat at the table and some influence. But that's not the only way that surveyors can become involved. We have our political action committee. You know, one election is over, and 2 years we'll have another one. And so individual personal contributions to the NSPS PAC is absolutely important and critical to the profession having a voice. And we will be sending out information about some special events the PAC will be having during this conference as well for those who are able to make a contribution at a certain level. But the other thing that our members should keep in mind is that, you know, part of the role of a congressman or a senator is to listen to their constituents and be knowledgeable about issues when they're voting. So it is absolutely essential that our members try to see their congressman or senator there at home, back in their state, back in their district, invite a congressman or senator to come to your office to learn about what the profession does. Maybe even invite them out to a project site. It's a great way to educate legislators. So the PAC is important. The Hill Day is important. Meeting with your congressman and senator at home is important. Sending a letter on an issue, particularly on a surveying and mapping issue. Those are all ways to for a surveyor to keep his name in front of his congressman or senator, to be engaged, and to develop a relationship so that he's a resource, so that when the congressman or senator is confronted with something that affects the surveying profession, he knows who to go to and he knows who to rely upon because he has that relationship and that member is that that resource.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody to take part in that side of things as much as possible. That's been one of the really extraordinarily positive things about our joint membership program. It's expanded our base of actual members who know legislators and can go talk to them directly, and that's been a big help.
Absolutely. And, you know, you and I, Kurt, have a very good program along with John Byrd, our registered lobbyist. You and I we're in communication either by email or telephone several times a week. I don't think a week goes by that we are not in touch with one another several times. John Natanich, our very capable chairman of our Joint Government Affairs Committee, again, on a weekly basis, we're in touch with him. We generally like for NSPS members to contact you, and you'll pass information on to me, and we're very well coordinated. So if anyone has an issue or has an opportunity to present an issue to a congressman or a senator, they're encouraged to let you know. And then finally, I think our members have seen a significant increase in the amount of government affairs-related information that we're sharing with the membership through News and Views. We, John Byrd and I and my staff, we put together items every week and provide them to you, Kurt, and they go into News and Views. There's a lot of good information about what's going on in Congress, a lot of information about what's going on in the market, what's going on in the federal agencies, and there are things that could be either threats or actually opportunities, particularly for, well, for all surveyors, but particularly for surveyors that may be in private practice. And then I would point out that before each of the two NSPS board meetings twice a year, we submit a very detailed report, not only on our activities, but on the status of issues that affect surveyors. And our most recent report was just done for the fall NSPS meeting in Overland Park, Kansas. And that report is on the NSPS website. And I would encourage our members to take a look at it. I think there's a lot of good information in there that's very useful to your practice.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And we only have about a minute left here, but one of the things that happened at that meeting that was a great positive was when we had Congressman Yoder come by. I think everybody got a lot out of that.
It was. In fact, I was on Capitol Hill this past week and happened to run into Congressman Yoder, and he enjoyed the time with our members, and we'll do more of that. And we'll have some members of Congress in as speakers during this conference in April. We're very fortunate that we picked a time when our crystal ball was accurate, and both the House and Senate schedules for next year are out, and they will be in session that week, so our members will get to visit with a lot of congressmen and senators, and we'll have some to come in and speak to our membership as well.
That's great to know, and it's time for us to go. Thanks so much for being with me today, John. It's been a great conversation, and I know our listeners have gotten a lot out of it.
Thanks, Kurt. My pleasure.
Talk with you soon.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.